folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's E-M-I-L dot G-O-R-G-E-E-S, emil.gorgis at tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so right before we dive into today's episode, just a heads up, I'm going to be heading off to Australia for about 3 weeks. Finally, first time leaving the country in the last 3 years, much needed holiday, well, working holiday, I suppose, and even more needed family time. We're going to visit mom, who desperately needs a family fix. It's been way too long. But what this means is that I'm going to be on mobile internet connection for most of the next 3 weeks, which naturally limits my video uploading capabilities. So I'll try to maybe upload some stuff whenever I'm on a wired connection, or alternatively publish some audio only content. But just in case that proves to be challenging as well, please forgive me in advance if I go radio silent on you for the next few weeks. I promise to be up and at 'em again toward the end of August, and hopefully feeling greatly rejuvenated and refreshed as well. So for today's episode, this is another JREP, or about two-thirds of our JREP crew to be exact, Emil, Tracy, and myself in a session, and we're talking all things related to furniture and appliances, new versus secondhand, what works best for what kind of property, warranties, replacements, disposals, removals, where and how to get the best price for these residential property necessities. And we also segue a bit into the Internet of Things, smart homes, automated devices, although we're going to have a bigger and deeper session about that particular topic in one of our future episodes. So nice casual chat there about all things furniture and mainly appliances related here in Japan. Hope you enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Got it.
Recording in progress. And we're back. JREP, Japan Real Estate Experts panel, featuring the lovely Tracy, the lovely Emil, and myself. Let's skip the intro this time. There are descriptions under our faces anyway. People know what we're all about, and then we'll get into it.
I think we're right over here for me.
Yeah. Tokyo-based real estate. You're an actual building.
Agent. It says agent. I think your screen's just too small. So yes, wow, what an exciting time. Finally, we're opening the borders, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Tracy, especially for you, a little bit for me, especially for you. It's been a slow.
Well, I've got people coming in. I've got people coming in on relocation. So these are people that are had visas approved way back when, and they're now starting to coming in. So these are people that have jobs. They're doing relocation. So they're coming in, staying with me for a month or two while they're getting longer term rentals. So, I'm full right now. I'm full.
Oh, great. Excellent.
Full. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And just for people who are listening, yeah, so Japan's had their borders closed to tourism for quite some time. And Tracy, being the short-term stay expert that she is, the manager that she is, this, I guess, inbound tourism restrictions seriously impact short-term hosts, short-term stay hosts. So, yeah, it's good that Japan's finally opening up, allowing tourism back in, hopefully from June, I think they
said, as of the time of this recording, so we're recording this on mid-May. As of this time, it seems to, the indication seems to be that borders will open in June, but there have been words of caution issued along the way. So we'll see how we go with that.
Yeah, I mean, they're saying they're going to open for tourists, but as long as you're in a, like a monitor tour, like make sure that there's going to be eyes watching you. You can't be let loose into the Wild West. So bringing your smells and diseases. So, I mean, that's just a bit insane, really. That's just a bit insane. I think it's just to keep locals happy.
Yeah, it's a step to opening up. So hopefully if that happens. And we do see that once they do these steps, they kind of move a little bit quickly. I think.
And there's more pressure coming from the government. There's more pressure coming from, you know, other politicians going, come on, guys, this is lunacy.
And so, business lobbies. They've been livid about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's more and more pressure. But
I hope so. Okay. But we did have the same announcement that group tours will be allowed, I think, towards the end of last year or beginning of this year. They quickly backtracked that one. So we'll see how we go.
Well, yeah, definitely. But that was pre-Omicron. Like in December, we were having like 5 cases a day in Tokyo. And then Omicron hit and went up to, you know, the thousands and thousands. That's why they stopped everything. Like they were really planning on end of December, we're down to very low, time to start everything up again. And then they've halted it again because of Omicron spike. So now hopefully, touch wood, there's nothing else in the horizon. But let's talk real estate.
I just add that I'm a lot more excited about actually getting out of Japan for a while. So hopefully, if Emil's experience is not too bad, because he's going a month before I do.
I'm going next week.
Oh, yeah, I thought you said July.
July to Australia. Next week, I'm going to the US.
Oh, okay.
For a week. For like a Web3 conference that I want to participate in. Just want to learn about the Web3 space and how that's going to be, how that's going to happen. So yeah, that's happening next week. So I'll be out just for like 7 days. So I'll let you know to the process, the ins and outs of having to leave. Going to the US.
Do you need a PCR kit?
I do need to test, but I think the certificate that they have, what is it? I'm still looking into the online system that we need for certificates, but there's the free ones now, I think you're doing as well.
These are the travel certificates. So yeah, I'll talk to you about it offline.
But this is just to get into Japan. I mean,
to get into America.
Oh, yeah, America. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. America requires testing. So yes, but that's my first trip on my own for a long time with 3 little kids. It's usually so much coordination or what have you. Now it's just like, ooh, agile. I can get ready in the morning of the trip.
Yeah.
And I'll be like in terms of packing and what have you. So where are we at with real estate? What's happened recently? I think I mentioned before there was a family that we had that was pregnant. They're pregnant. They're expecting a baby in June, end of June. So in 5-6 weeks time. So we just settled on their house in Yokohama, a brand new build. That was 2 days ago on Monday. They got the keys and we went into the house and visited it. And it was really sweet. Just, so thank all the thank yous and congratulations and all that sort of stuff. And I was driving away from their house and they just sort of were standing by the front door, holding hands. Mum's like, 8 months pregnant, belly sticking out, just young family, soon to be, real family, just sort of waving goodbye. And it's just like really picturesque. And it's in Yokohama. So the block of land was quite big and there's a nice, beautiful new house. And it's not like, stuck in amongst all others so much. I was, very, the cliche, new family home buyer, 100%. And even the wife's handbag, you can see she had the emblem, in Japan, pregnancy. They have the pregnancy token badge that they put on a handbag. So when you jump on the train or whatnot, other people know, oh, this person's pregnant. I should give up my seat for them.
Don't you get me started, Emil.
Optimism. Optimistically speaking. But yeah, it was just lovely, just really fantastic. Yeah, so happy
But what is your feeling about how the market's going? I'm sensing that there's certainly a cool down in the rental space. There doesn't seem to be as many people renting. There seems to be a lot of people leaving, but there seems to be a lot of vacancies in just in the rental space in central Tokyo. As a place that I'm looking at getting for short-term rentals, they're desperate for me to get it. But I've got to get my licenses and stuff, all those ducks in a row first. And they're dropping the price. They're saying, like, and they're wanting to give me 2 months free and all this stuff. So it's like, it's really tempting. So
I'm not feeling this in other cities. I wonder if that's a part of that trend of people going out of Fukuoka, going out of Tokyo to work in the suburbs or the countryside if they can.
Well, I am also noticing, just in, this is anecdotal, I don't have any stats whatsoever, that there are a lot of like long-term residents who are leaving, and the people coming in, there's more people coming in, but it's not one-to-one. It's still, you know, a net loss to Japan. And also, you know, my husband being in the moving business, he's also seeing it in that there's, if you are coming into Japan, you could pretty much furnish a whole place for free because, you know, the amount of furniture that's being, you know, bashed, burned and buried is overwhelming. So, you know, if you want to open a secondhand shop, come to Japan right now because there's no shortage of stock.
Tracy, on that note, I just want to do a bit of a plug for your husband. So I'm one of the guys, I've closed up like two Airbnb properties, that two full houses that I've sort of shut up and put to regular Japanese rental because COVID was basically too dry. And yeah, I just, you know, called your husband and I didn't even have to go there. I just get the keys in the key box. You go check it out. Let me know what it is to, you know, you get rid of everything. You sell whatever you want, pocket it, just empty the whole thing. I don't want it. I need it all clear and vacated by like an empty and ready for the cleaners to come in and regular rental like in a week's time or 2 weeks time. And he's like, yep, I got it. And it's all done. It's all done. So
yeah, he's been doing a lot of that. And actually where he is right now, he's actually doing a run to Salvation Army because he did another disposal this week. And any storage we have is just packed to the roof of things that we think are worthwhile for our next few properties that we're going to open when the, you know, when the market heats up a little bit. So
yeah, I had a property in, it was an in-laws property in Hachioji.
Yes.
That we were using for storage. And that was like, you know, from 2-3 years ago when the regulations came in, we had about 3 or 4 properties worth of furniture in there, like fridge, water.
Oh, he's breaking up.
That seems to be happening to me. You're like breaking up on me.
Like 80 beds. The fancy ones, I'm just basically all at once. Yeah.
Breaking up a little bit, Emil. Breaking up a little bit. Oh, and he's off.
Hold on. I'm just switching. How about now?
That's better. We can hear you now. We just can't see your handsome face.
Okay. Well, I can't see Ziv's face.
Really? I can see Tracy.
Yeah, I think. Just not there. We go. There we go. Let's see. Let me turn my camera off and on again very briefly. Oh, yeah. You see? You got me? Okay. Yeah. So, we had like this house up there that had, I don't know, like 4 of these like 80,000 yen IKEA sofa beds. 3 or 4 sets of double beds, IKEA double beds, actual double bed frames, mattresses, so much stuff. And then the in-law was like, we're selling the house, basically they're going to tear down the house. They're going to tear it down and sell it just as vacant land. And he goes, what do you want to do with the stuff? And I said, can the guys that tear it down just get rid of all the stuff as well? I just don't want to deal with it ever again. And he goes, he's like, oh, can you check? So yeah, they'll look for free. Done. So that was just one headache, gone. Maybe like 2 or 3 million. But the problem is, it's IKEA furniture, right?
Yeah, it's
so, just sizable. And it was about an hour and a half drive away, right? So just to, if someone wants to buy it and access it, it's just too much headache. Even if someone just wants to come have a look at it, it's not worth it. It's not worth the headache for me to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Just, you know, for maybe a few million, I even
what Ashley's doing is he's, you know, basically all this stuff he's giving it away for free. He's the money he's making is on the deliveries. So so even that's problematic. But yeah, really, like people coming into Japan, you can really, you know, just, you know, you can really furnish like with really good stuff very, very cheaply or next to nothing.
Definitely.
It's like the old days, like the bubble days where, you know, when my brother first moved to Japan, like he again furnished his whole house from the sodaigomi that was left on the street. So
so maybe it's worth also updating the listeners about why furniture is given away or thrown away. Tracy or Ziv, I'll let you guys jump into that. But I think that's something about Japan that is interesting because back home, I know in Australia, if I wanted to get rid of a sofa or to get rid of something, one, you'd sell it generally. Or if you wanted to give it away, wow, you'd have people lining out the door like in a minute to come grab anything.
Yeah.
But what's the situation in Japan? Why don't we see that?
Well, Australia, we'd be also leaving it on the street. Especially
you'd be living on the street, yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it would normally, if it's not in bad shape, it'd normally be gone in an overnight, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the issue is that, that, you know, traditionally Japanese people want new and shiny. You know, even the bubble days when there was a new model, when there was a new model air conditioner, when there was a new model microwave, there was nothing wrong with the existing microwave, but there was a new model out that had, that went ping instead of pong. And so everybody wanted it and disposable income was never really an issue here in Japan. And also everyone's encouraged to, you know, not to be sustainable. Everyone's encouraged to consume. And so secondhand goods really have no perceived value. And so they're put out in the street as what's called sodaigomi, which is large gomi. So anything more than like a toaster, if it's smaller than a toaster once a month, you can leave it out and they have a hard rubbish pickup day that is that's done. But anything larger than that, you have to call up the ward office and get a sticker and get a date and they come around and pick it up.
And pay for it.
And pay for it. But it's not actually, it's not that expensive.
It's not that expensive.
It's just a pain because, it's just a pain because, you know, it's usually like a month, like you've got to book it a month in advance. And if you're leaving next week, you can't, you know, you can't just leave it on the street. So you do have to be a bit organized. And that's why, you know, you can, if people are so desperate that they're just giving stuff away, you can, if you've got a truck or you can have a car, you can, you know, pick up stuff with people that are desperate because they don't want to pay or they don't have the time or they can't be bothered with it. Like, you know, like you said, Emil.
Like me.
But like I said, there's no perceived value, like the depreciation. And for a company, you can, you know, a lot of these sort of capital, capital investments, you can actually depreciate on your tax. And that's sort of an included tax write-off. You know, which is what we do. We write off our, you know, we depreciate our assets, be them computers or furniture or whatever. That's all depreciated.
You should probably also note that that's one of the peeves, and it's a legitimate peeve that people have with foreigners who are not aware of the proper way to dispose of their rubbish, whether it's big or small. And I hate to say this because it's feeding into Emil's narrative from some previous episode, but we've just had another case, and it's not the first, of a foreign student who just took off and just left everything that they owned in the apartment. You know, it's not just
foreigners, actually.
No, of course not.
There was a friend of mine, and she, this happened last week, no word of a lie, she's got it on film. There was a person who was dressed all in white with a hoodie, a white mask and sunglasses, dragged a mattress down the street, and she got them on the outside security cameras coming down the street, and they dumped this manky, disgusting mattress on the outside of her property. And so then she had to call up sodaigomi, and she called the police. It's like, who is this illegal dumping person? So, but it had to be local. So, you know, just to see this guy obviously prepared, you know, wearing a disguise, dragging this like manky old mattress down the street to dump it. So it isn't just foreigners, but the other time that that happened was at just after the earthquake, after the big Tohoku earthquake, when a lot of people just took off really quickly. Friends of mine just said there were people that just stood up from their dining table and left, and all the relocation companies had to come in and, you know, do things like empty out the dishwasher, things like that. So, yeah.
That was a bit of a time of crisis, though. I don't actually...
So the issue with, I think, the furniture disposal in Japan, one is the reason I think a lot of people don't just collect other people's stuff, because we see with Mercari and Yahoo Auctions, these platforms that sell used goods, they're very popular. They're booming. There is definitely a market for these things. But when you get to large appliances and furniture, it's hard to move it because nobody has cars. A lot of people don't have cars. If it's places where do you have cars, actually, like you do see movement, people will come pick it up, etc. But it's not available to the masses, because whereas in Australia and in the West, it's quite common. A lot of people have cars. So I think that's one aspect to it. The other one is move out deadlines. People are often stuck with, like, especially these smaller places, that they have to move out by a certain date, and then they call for the disposal and realize they have to pay money to dispose of stuff. And even though it's not overly expensive, like a spring mattress is 2,000 yen. Kind of expensive, kind of not, but it's like 4 weeks in advance. It depends on the ward, but it's like 4 weeks in advance you have to book it. Mm. And so people who are looking to move out don't realize this until a bit too late. And like, well, yeah. I've got to get rid of this mattress in 3 days. And Sodai got me the cheap option, which is the paid counselor to come pick it up option, is not available for me for another month. So I can either pay someone to dispose of it, which is going to cost me $100, 10,000 yen, or I can just strong arm it down to this lady's house and drop it off in front there. So I see the situation. But yeah, that's the nature of how things are.
Yeah, in Japan. Electronics are hard too, because electronics have to have it there. You know, furniture is one thing, but electronics have to be disposed of in a different way. And if you use the recycle places, they will charge a ridiculous amount of money to take working televisions that they then turn around and sell again. So they make money off both ends. But buying white goods from a recycle shop, like, because we often do that, we often buy, fridges and washing machines from, rather than buying it from someone leaving, we'll buy it from a recycle shop because it's been cleaned up. It has a warrant. They also give a warranty. And they work, and they get it, you know, getting something secondhand from someone leaving. When you're getting a fridge and you have to, like, you know, clean out someone else's gook when you're trying to set up a house, that's no fun at all. So we've found that we get much better value for our time and energy buying from a secondhand recycle center. We're never going to buy new. Like, I'm never going to buy a fridge new for a short-term rental ever. When I can get something that's like 2 years old, 3 years old, perfect working condition, delivered with a warranty for less than half the price. So yeah, so that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but on the disposal side, there's, you know, another big culprit is, for some reason, farmers or people in more rural communities. Like, if you go hiking halfway up the mountain, there's always a dumping ground where the local farmers just chuck away metal and white goods and just rubbish. And you would think they would be a little bit more aware of that, but apparently no.
Well, wow. You see people dump cars as well. Like,
cars too. Nothing. I've seen a lot of that.
Cars and motorbikes and bicycles just dumped in very, you know, and you've got to be careful as well. If you're around Tokyo, often Akiya, people will dump things in Akiya in the middle of the night at abandoned houses. So
you should have had Matt here today. He probably have a few things to say about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm sure, he's got a bunch of stories. I was going to say something. I completely slipped my mind. Oh, yeah. There we go.
So dispose of your rubbish responsibly.
No, but
foreigners do have a bad reputation for this, and a lot of Japanese. I mean, one of the main reasons that people complain about having a minpaku or a short-term stay in their building is those bloody tourists don't know the proper rubbish disposal rules, right? I mean, Tracy, I'm sure you've heard that before.
Well, that's part of my job. My job, I don't sell cheap accommodation. That's not my product. I sell a local experience. And that local experience includes education about community responsibility. So if you're wanting cheap accommodation, don't come stay with me. If you want to understand the DNA of what it's like to live in Tokyo, I'm your girl. I will give you all the information on how to thrive, on how to, you know, how to live like a local. And that includes being a good neighbor and making sure that your trash is well, you know, you're well educated on how to dispose of your trash and how, you know, so, you know, that's my product, which is different from other short-term rental hosts around. But that's what I'm pretty careful about.
Crucial.
Yeah. But I should give a plug, you know, my husband actually, he's just driven home, give a plug for him. He's, you know, if you needing you know, disposal or just moving stuff around, he's, you know, he's a good guy. It's gold.
How should we contact him?
We can contact him through me anytime. He has a Facebook page which is Gold Star. So
Gold Star. So I'm sure there's lots of gold star.
Gold Star,
the show notes, if you send me the link, Tracy.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. So it's also on Tokyo Family Stays. It's also like there's also a page on Tokyo Family Stays for Gold Star Removals. So yeah.
Yeah, so everyone new who's listening, Gold Star Removals.
You Gold Star Moving, stuff. Yeah. He'll move. Take care of all of your moving needs.
So if you need to get stuff, you need to get rid of stuff because you're moving, you need to dispose of it. Or you need to sell something, or if you bought something on one of, like, you know, on
Craigslist,
Mercari, whatnot, you need someone to pick it up for you and just move it. You need a man with a van.
Yep.
Man with a van.
Call for a quote. No, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. I like it.
I've learned this week that you can actually negotiate when you're buying white goods from big stores, like big boxes, like a Big Camera or Yodobashi Camera, all of those. Apparently you can negotiate. The price is not final. I was not aware of that. So
I didn't know that either. I've never tried that.
Oh, and educated. Okay. From a Japanese person. Like I thought it was,
newbies. You guys are so new. All right.
Give it to us.
I just look for last year's model and, you know, last year's
model. No, I know they're discounted when there's a new model that comes out, but that's an official discount. It's actually, there's a sticker on the product.
So can I give you my
absolutely
this is what I tell everyone about it. So this is what I hustle and haggle. One about negotiations, two about warranties. Okay. Because the point I wanted to mention is, you know, actually, Trace, let me talk about warranties first.
Sure.
Okay. I historically like buying things new because you get an extended, especially white goods, because you get extended. I got some kid yelling in the back. One of my kids, or the street's kids. I'm on the balcony, so I hear everything on the road. Warranties for white goods. Generally, the fridge and air conditioners, I want to get 10-year warranties. Okay, because if it breaks down, it's going to cost a lot. Warranties in Japan are very cheap. It's 5% of the purchase price. So often if you buy something at Big Camera or wherever, even online, you can get a 5-year or 10-year extended warranty for 5% of the purchase price. In Australia, it's about, you know, maybe about 10% or so is what they charge, or 15% of the product value for the extended warranty. At 5% extended warranty cost, I think is very good value, right? So that's my initial position, which is why I always try to get extended warranty. Generally that 5%, if the product is over 100,000 yen, then it gets a 10-year extended warranty. If the product is under 100,000 yen, like between, I think, 50 to 100,000 yen, that same 5% will get you a 5-year extended warranty, okay? Except washing machines, even though they're over 100,000, you'll still just get a 5-year extended warranty with it. This is through Big Camera or Yodobashi, or even on the online retailers, you have the option for extended warranty. Okay, So generally when I get air conditioners and like any of the like the air conditioners, fridge, or washing machine, I'll pay the 5% for the extended warranty. And that's just sort of peace of mind that I've got for it. Even small appliances, vacuums, and like I like the Dyson vacuums and stuff like that. So, you know, they're still like 50 to 80,000 yen, depends on the model. I'll still pay the 5% and just have peace of mind for 5 years, right? However, I have found something recently that, and this is one of the reasons I don't really usually buy used for the items.
That's for your personal house, right? Which is different from
even for the Airbnb stuff, even for the rental stuff, because I still want the warranty. It's too cheap. Like if something happens, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second, right? And
we interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
Right. And look, that's completely fine. Depends on how much you want to spend on putting it together. And also what the item is, right? A TV, yes, because I find there's not much saving to be had buying used and inconvenience. But furniture doesn't really matter. Certain white
goods. But get to the haggling.
Oh, hold on. No. But about the insurance, the warranty, I found something interesting. TEPCO now it's a monthly subscription. It's like 350 yen or 500 yen per month. So it's 3,000 to 5,000 yen per year. And they give you a 10-year warranty on your house goods. So what includes a washing machine, but fridge and air conditioner units. And if you pay a bit extra, you can also get like if you have an IH cooktop, okay? So these, like a few of these key items that generally I like to get the long extended warranty for, even if you have them used, just by subscribing to this service, if anything breaks down within 10 years of manufacturing date, it's either 10 years of purchase date, or if you bought it used, it's 10 years of the manufacturer date, right? They'll provide a warranty for it. So if you bought a 5-year-old fridge, if you're under this warranty plan, then they'll cover it for you.
That's kind of like white goods insurance kind of thing.
Yeah, but yes. I'm just going to push back a little bit on that, Emil, because, you know, I've had 50 fridges, 50 washing machines, you know, going in and out of places over the last 10 years. The number of times that a fridge has broken down, I can count on one hand. Yes, they have broken down from time to time. The secondhand washing machines have broken down from time to time. But it's been, you know, and when it does happen, it's a royal pain in the butt. Like, you know, because it's usually when a guest is in and And you know, we've got to, you know, madly scramble and get something in. But like I said, 50, like the amount of problems that we've had with secondhand white goods that we've bought from the recycle centre has been very, very little.
Well, the fridges, I agree, but we've definitely had washing machines kick the bucket more than one occasion, even just for our own personal use since we've been living here.
I've had the same washing machine. I only use the top loaders, and you know, for short-term rentals, the combination washer dryer things that take 3 hours per time, we don't touch with a barge pole because it just does not work when we're getting people in and out the same day. We always use top loaders and then a separate dryer unit. You know, we've had very, very few problems. And the one I've got for my own house is, you know, that's 10, 12 years old and it's still going fine. So
let's separate this, I think. Rental and short-term stay sort of stuff where it's generally a cheaper quality item that you've put in there. Hey, the ash in the back. Yeah. It's a cheaper priced item that you have in there, right? Versus in your house, you've got the one with generally like your own personal home, you've generally spent up and you've got the one with the bells and whistles. Okay, there's more mechanics to it, it's a costlier investment. And also, you can't live without it for a day. Like, you, if it breaks down, you need to be able to call the person right away. And again, like, the reason it's only 5%, you know, repair insurance coverage is because the rate of damage or the rate of breakdown is low.
Yeah.
Right. So it still needs to be prepped, yeah, which is why, in your experience, you've had very little.
Very few.
But, for me, it's the convenience one. It's a cost that you can, you know, if you're in the business, you can put it down to almost as an insurance. But for me, it's just the headache mitigation. That the moment it happens, bang, get someone to come and they fix it. And that's it, rather than having to pay. Like, my oven went out, my oven, so the warranty has expired, right? And the control panel, that was 83,000 yen.
Yikes. Right?
You're not talking about the haggling. I'm disappointed. I was waiting for that.
Now, okay, that's it. So that's one thing I found. So TEPCO has that warranty plan, which I think is interesting for an intriguing option for many people. Haggling, whenever I go into a big camera or Yodobashi or whatever, the first thing I do is go on kakaku.com on my phone.
Yeah, right. Yep.
And I search, or even the app has a barcode scanner. You scan the barcode, it tells you what the prices are. Online.
Then they'll beat the price, will they?
And you just show them, this is the best price online, and that's it. Like, you can try to haggle, but they'll actually turn around and say, like, have you seen it cheaper elsewhere? Is your online shop? Because it's hard for them just to discount the price. But if they see that you've done it, they go, okay, yeah, great. Then we can match it, and they'll do some kind of combination with the matching. So. For those who don't know, so Big Camera will give you something like points, big points. So the standard is 10% on most products. So if you buy a coffee maker for, I'll do 20,000 yen, right? It'll cost 20,000 yen, but you get 2,000 yen worth of points. Okay. Sometimes I'll turn around and say, oh, look, you see it online for 17,000 yen. This is 18, this is 20,000, but you get 2,000 yen a point, so effectively it's 18. You know what? Let's give you 15% points. Okay, so it's effectively 17,000. So if 20,000, but you're getting 3,000 worth of points, it's 17,000 yen real cost. That's the same as what you're seeing online. How's that sound? And you go, yep, I'll take it. Give me all the points. I like it. And that's how they do it. The biggest one you have, and this is what I recommend to everyone, is air conditioners. Air conditioners, because especially like my business people buying brand new houses, very, very common. And they'll need to buy, you know, 3, 4, 5 air conditioner units. So that's, and plus installation. So a decent air conditioner for the living room is about 250,000 yen for the LDK, because you want a large one. So just has to be a lot bigger. And generally you want the one that's got the sensors, and now they come with the Wi-Fi connection and Alexa voice control or smart home. You know, Alexa, set the living room aircon to 18 degrees, whatever it may be. So you're going to pay a little bit more for that rather than the basic, you know, 100,000 yen, or for the bedrooms. You can get 40,000 yen units, but again, like if you can also get an 80,000 yen unit, or what I used to do traditionally was, if it's 80 or 90,000, I'd buy the next one up just to make it 100,000 yen, just so I can get the 10-year extended warranty instead of the 5-year extended warranty. Okay. But yeah, essentially you just show them, like you pick the models. Sometimes I pre-check the models on kakaku.com, and then I'll go and find that specific item. But yeah, that's how you do it. And often they'll say, yeah. And often they'll say on air conditioners, look, online it's, 100,000 yen. We're selling it for 120,000 yen. But in 120,000, you get 10% points. That's 12,000 yen right there. And there's 8,000 difference. We include free, Big Camera will include free installation. That's worth 6,000 yen. So now there's only 2,000 yen difference in effective price. Okay, we'll give you a few extra percentage points.
If it's an aircon, it's a lot more than 6,000 yen installation too.
But also I've gone to, I've actually looked at kakaku.com, and I've made the mistake of actually like finding out where the shop is and actually going to the shop. So, buying it from the shop that had the cheapest one. I've never used the haggling at the big box stores.
I will try that.
But what I have received before is coupons, like
5% increase in points.
Lobster. Well, like like a lobster coupon last week. For
no,
like,
not a lobster. Sorry, a crab, a big crab.
No, a coupon for like, just like money, like beer tickets or, what are they called? Like gift certificates.
Shopping coupons.
Gift certificates that you can use at it, like that you can use infinitum. So instead of the points, I've actually had been given that as a, as the effective discount.
Is that a small store? That's at the retail, like a small.
No, that's been a big camera or Yodobashi camera. No. I think during some sort of environmental, you bought the thing that was environmentally eco points and
eco points. Yeah. That was a, I don't know if they still do that. That was a program that
was a few years ago.
That is another thing though that's unique to Japan. I mean, not the vouchers exist anywhere, but the fact that's like some, you pay your taxes locally, you get bags of rice, you buy a new fridge, you get a crab box, like stuff that you wouldn't imagine. A white goods reseller would have anything to do with, but people love that, right? They love that here.
Yeah, there's a lot of these like tax incentives and whatnot. They get a bit complex, and everything in Japan is a bunch of steps and hurdles, and sometimes the complexity is not worth the effort.
No, but I mean the types of products, the kind of agricultural and food-related goods that you get when you buy something completely, and it's like there's a little farmer in the back that's actually growing rice just to give it to customers, right?
Yeah, definitely they have that. Eats as well, meat and fish.
We got a bag of rice. There's a renovation going on up the street, and they came around and we got some towels and a bag of rice to say, we're going to be annoying you because we're doing some renovations down the street. And jamashimasu, so we're sorry for the inconvenience, and here's a bag of rice. So it's like, okay, cool, thank you.
We have now, we got a neighbor sort of moving in across the street. Traditional manner, they'll come and they'll introduce themselves to all the houses, and they give like a little bag, a gift of either, it could be like a confectionery, a snack, or bath bombs are pretty common as well.
Towels. I mean, there's whole sections on Amazon on like buying this stuff, and we do that when we do minpaku. When we get a new minpaku license, we introduce ourselves to all the neighbors and make sure that they've got our card and they know who to contact, just to put people's minds at rest. Because it
is quite a difference between, we had this conversation, I actually just published an episode with this conversation. There's a huge difference between owner occupied buildings and buildings where most people rent. Like when we moved into a building where people are renting, they're not that happy when you come knocking. Yeah, you come knocking on their door with a gift. I just moved in. Whereas if it's owner occupiers, they know they're going to be seeing you on a daily basis. You're going to be coming to the kumiai meeting, so that they're friendly, they're happy, they're chatting. Yeah. But the renters are, half of them are hikikomori from the looks of it.
Yeah, but I think it also depends on the environment. Like if it's a family, right? And you know the kids are going to interact. They're all going to go to a local school. Even if you're renting, you'll meet the other people. But yeah, definitely with purchases, is very common. So, what you know, in the majority what's very common now is, you know, what you touched on, that is a point to think about is if a mansion or a particular building or area, usually we can tell with mansions is if they are mostly owner occupied versus rental, right? So if we're looking at a building complex and we know it's 80% owner occupied, then where the potential client is a lot happier knowing, okay, it's going to be well looked after. The owners, because they live there, they care to pay extra for the maintenance fee, yeah. Right? They want to make sure that the money is spent well, that they're going to update the lobby to make it look nice and appealing, right? That the funds are well spent, that they do the renovations, there are no disputes. Whereas if it's largely rentals, yeah, and you mentioned before, Ziv, as well, like for your clients, you don't want to increase it because you may flip it or sell it later.
Definitely. As an owner. Or sell it later.
Yeah, you don't really care. As long as getting the rent, like you're not going to get the ROI on rental based on how nice the entrance lobby is decorated.
Yeah. Right. And the same goes for the renovations. Hello.
Hello. Hey. This is my son, wow. Max. He's just come home from school. You can take your mask off now.
You can take your mask off.
Wow. Yeah, so the same goes for when you're renovating a property that you've just purchased for investment purposes, right? Like we just bought one for ourselves in Itoshima near Fukuoka, which is a really good place to hit before it starts going up too rapidly, by the way, for anyone listening, because it already has been. But we're looking at the renovations. And, oh, we got another one. Oh,
another small human.
Wow. He wants
the iPad. I kind of feel sorry
for the iPad.
From the office today. Now I should have brought my kid in too.
So it's
quite easy to estimate if you've got a good property manager. They'll let you know that, okay, let's say we, you know, just spruce up the bathroom, or we put in a whole new bathroom, or we just spruce up this, or we put in a whole new tatami or what have you. They can estimate very accurately how much extra rent you're actually going to be getting for those kind of works. And it usually, I mean, it's not necessarily going to be the cheapest possible renovation, but pretty close to it, because the difference in rental income would be quite low. You might get a tenant a little bit faster when you've got a vacancy in case the renovation is a little bit nicer, but it's usually not really worth it to do anything beyond the very basic stuff.
Actually, I wish Blanca was here, because I want to sort of hear so I've heard anecdotally that you can buy kitchens that are the samples of the display kitchens. You can pick them up on Yahoo Auctions really cheaply, and then you just need, you know, a Bendy-san to plop them in.
In the shops themselves too, they'll offer off-display stuff.
Yeah, because again, new and shiny, and it's new and shiny for apartments, it's new and shiny for appliances and kitchens. So that's why, you know, if you don't mind getting the secondhand stuff or working with it, and then you can, you know, really save money. But we've really covered two schools of thought here. It's like, you know, go the secondhand route that has the warranty, or, you know, spend a little more and get the extended warranty. So
there's a bit to be said for the profile of the property as well. I mean, some properties generally tend to attract higher income tenants, and then they and you do want stuff to be nicer in there.
Oh, absolutely. But,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so I was just going to talk about that. So, yeah, we had a property in Azabu area, mm-hmm. Like a 2LDK. The rent was about 550,000 yen a month.
Yep.
So 2LDK, geez, you got it going in Tokyo there.
It's a nice big... good location. Yeah. Like it was a huge, it was like, I think the LDK was like 27 jaw.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a nice, beautiful place. Like they just, the amount that I think the renovation cost to renovate it was about like 22 million yen.
Mm-hmm.
Just in renovation costs. So it was like nicely done.
That's
like
half a billion if you buy for that. Okay.
Yeah. So different discussions that we have, not in other, right. I think the value of it would have been like between 100 to 150 million yen, right? But anyway, just for renovation, went out there and it was like he wanted to make sure, like redid the walls, like any sort of little like resurfaced the floor. It was all natural floorboards, sort of resurfaced the revarnished the floorboards, touched up any little bit of wallpaper that was a bit off, even though it was only like done 3 years ago. Any bit of wallpaper, any little bumps, any imperfections, because he wanted to be very, very nice for the next for the tenants. Right, he used to live there, but then he moved out. He's moving overseas, so very nice for the tenants, and also it affects the quality of tenant that you get. Right, people that are willing to that like something nice are going to treat it more nicely, especially when you have such a prime kind of property. And also in relation to the cost of rent. Right, if you're looking at 60,000 yen a month properties, 80,000 yen a month rental properties, it's hard to justify a million yen or even 500,000 yen on a like almost a year's worth of rent on a new bathroom.
Yeah,
right. But you can justify, 3 weeks of rent on a new bathroom.
Absolutely. And I mean, look, if someone's paying 550,000 yen, they're absolutely right to expect this level of work, right?
Yeah, correct.
But Emil, what you're really getting into the, W3, right? So, Internet of Things, I've always sort of thought that Japan is kind of lagging behind the rest of the world in getting, Internet of Things happening, because it's just so disjointed between... the fridge people and the air conditioning people, because there's no sort of central heating here. How's that coming along? Because obviously I'm interested in having being able to control remotely the temperature inside a house.
I'd assume that they would be a leader in that. They love their gadgets here.
No,
they don't speak to each other.
So I'll jump in to explain briefly. So like IoT, the Internet of Things, is I think still considered like Web 2. The Web 3 I mentioned earlier is more like metaverse, virtual worlds type stuff. So completely, and blockchain type technologies. So Internet of Things discussion. I like the idea of a smart house, but my understanding until recently was, so the reason air conditioners and units didn't have Wi-Fi built into them, a lot of them didn't have these Wi-Fi cables built into them, was because of regulation. You can't have a device like a certain white good that allows certain frequencies to be done. I don't know if they've changed that or not, but like, so when I bought my air conditioners, it was a separate external Wi-Fi unit that has to connect to enable that functionality, and it costs like 10,000 yen a unit. Now though, they do have them that can connect, but you have it. But the thing is, so air conditioners are one thing. In Japan, lights were always remote controlled.
Yeah, but that's an extra remote control,
But let's sort of step back a bit, right? I think in the same way that Japan had an intermediary step in their technology that made it unnecessary to do the big jump, right? So whereas in the West we had just light bulbs, and then all of a sudden they went to smart light bulbs that you can control with your voice. Like they have connected light bulbs that you don't have to go and do the switch. You can be in bed and tell it to be quiet. Whereas in Japan, they always had the remote control ones. You could have a remote control by a bedhead, you can turn it off from your... So even now, it's like, if I've got a remote control, like why do I want a voice activated light? Because if I have to go and go to actually physically switch it off every time, then yes, that definitely. But why do I need a voice activated light now when I have a remote control, right? For that same light. So that's why I find it hard. I've got friends in Australia that are like, oh yeah, we can just set the mood in the room, or just, Alexa, turn on living room lights, or do this, do that. I don't need that, because it's good enough. If I didn't have a remote control at all, then yes, I'd want the voice connectivity. But because I've got the remote control, is it worth to change all these just for the added option of voice? I think that intermediary step that they had, that's one reason I think it hasn't sort of taken off. And two, it's all the big players that do it. It's not so common to get these no-name Chinese brands that do everything, right? That in Australia that we have a lot of, like any no-name, no-brand TV in Australia has Android TV built into it, right? They're super cheap and they have Android TV. Whereas in Japan, no, it's all like, you know, Sony, Panasonic, Hitachi, Sharp, Toshiba TVs, right? And they all like to have their own way of doing things. Same with the air conditioning units. They like to have their own way of doing things. And because I feel white goods are controlled so much by these large companies, they do it their own particular way.
Yeah, there's not a lot of integration. Like I said, there's not a lot of integration. So, I mean, obviously I'm looking at trying to add some automation for door, like remote door locking. And so there's some new technology coming out that I think I'll be putting into my houses to be, you know, so I at the moment everything's keys. It's all like old school. But
do you want Ninja Locks? I've got five. I don't want.
Sorry?
You can take them. You want Ninja Locks? I've got about five or seven Ninja Locks.
No, I'm actually looking at the Yale ones, because then that can, again, it can connect to my remote monitoring system. So Ninja Locks.
Ninja Lock. I've got the first iteration. I don't know if they released another one or not. It basically literally just fits over your current handle.
Right.
And it's connected to Bluetooth. So you get to the front door and you can knock on it and activates the Bluetooth, and then your phone app, you just unlock or relock, and you can set as the owner like which accounts have access to it or not, and you can see which account has entered the room or exited the room or all that sort of stuff.
Okay. Does it have a monthly fee? That's what's caught me off in the past, is there's been a monthly fee, you know, and it's just like, are you kidding me? Another monthly fee?
No, so the ones I bought are standalone. They have, I think, a service which you connect. You get a separate little wire, a Bluetooth connector box that stays connected. Because it's Bluetooth, there's no subscription.
Yeah.
It connects to your phone. But you can get like a little separate device that is permanently plugged that will have a Bluetooth connection to the unit and then to the server. But you don't really need to do that. Like, it's not necessary. And when I use them for my Airbnbs, they do go to standalone. However,
you can't see it.
Yeah.
That's number one, I have to go, but regardless, can we save that smart home conversation for whole episode about that? Because then I'm really interested in that kind of stuff. I'd love to know what's up.
Sounds good. All right.
Cool. But Tracy, if Ash wants to come past and pick up, like, I think I've like five of those units, they're like 20,000 or 30,000 yen each. And again, I was going to throw them out because I don't want them. And they all function fine. And you can purchase for like 500 yen the adapter. Everyone's got, you know, doors have different sort of units on it. You can purchase the adapters for them for a few hundred yen each.
Okay. Really cheap. Don't throw them away. Let me have a look. Glad I mentioned it.
In the boxes. Cool.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for your time. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, so there you have it. All things appliance, or as we call them in Australia, white goods related. Hope you found some value in our banter. As you can probably tell, we love talking shop. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.